virtue? Is this fooling anyone else? Never worked so long and hard to cement a failure. We can blow on our thumbs and posture, but the lonely are such delicate things. The wind from a wasp could blow them into the sea, with stones on their feet, lost to the light and the loving we need. Still to come, though it's part and you know it, there is a numbness in your heart and it's growing. I click my heels, get the devils in line. A list of things I could lay the blame on might give me a way out. But with each turn, it's this front and center, like a dot stuck square in your eye. Every post you can hitch your faith on is a pie in the sky, chock full of lies. We devise to make sinking stones fly. And still to come, though it's part and you know it, there is a numbness in your heart and it's growing. Thank you.
yes, marhaban, as I sit to drink my delicious soda and to commune with you. I am a doctor, Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. I'm here at WMBR Cambridge erecting a serotonin ashram just filling the space with my voice and my spirit, creating an Ouroboros of healthy energy. Just feel those energies gradually growing and ruminating all about. How energetically the grasses seem to grow. And yet, so much of the grass is brown. I do wonder if the brown grass corresponds to browner life, or is it simply the end of another beginning, the beginning of a new ending? I think there is much wisdom to be found through the grass. But the grass rarely yields its wisdom without an attack. The extraction process is a subtle one, but it is one that may be undertaken with success if one is in the proper frame of reference. Of course, I think a mystery to me, a person who grew in an area without much grass, is where is the wisdom located in the grass? Is it left? Does the wisdom depart? when the grass grows? Must it be destroyed in some way in order for the wisdom extraction to commence, to meet with success? And yet I am often told that there is great wisdom in the grass. I myself wonder if perhaps there is not more wisdom in the sand. The wisdom in the sand lies deep beneath the dry surface. My belief, of course, is that the grass yields but a shadow of the deep, deep wisdom of the earth. The quality of the grass is that it extracts the wisdom. It brings the wisdom forth like a straw. When you are receiving this wisdom, when you extend a limb or a phalange, root both feet on the earth or neither, with your hands on your thighs, you explore and begin to receive wisdom. And the wisdom that you receive makes you forget that you are there. It makes you stop remembering. You become disconnected from the moment that you ceased existing in a mere moment ago. What connects you to that moment is your memory, and your memory is failing. Which brings us, of course, to memory itself. Memory is much of what a person is. What is a person when they lose their memory? Do they cease to exist? You learn, of course, as you attempt to speak in this state, that there are parts to memory. There is long memory and there is short memory, which is unconscious, and also there is conscious short memory. Losing only the conscious short memory, you find yourself speaking a sentence and not remembering what you are saying by the time you reach the end of it. But if you were to record yourself, you would find that you are largely coherent. Is that not alarming? May be difficult to appreciate the quality of being connected from moment to moment, because it, like breathing, is an assumption. It is that highly valued. But really imagine for a moment, if you can, that you are trapped you are trapped in a situation where one moment is not necessarily connected to the previous moment. You are waking up repeatedly, and yet you have a set of memories that do not the one connect with the previous one. They stack. You find that you are standing, you are sitting, the radio is on, and you are hearing me, but it is also off because at some other point you are experiencing it off. And this simultaneous experience, do you find it terrifying or do you find it relaxing? Too many, to the unprepared, who have such an experience of derealization or depersonalization, they may find it terrible, grotesque, as though they found that they were in a room of people who were laughing at the corpse of a small dog. Or as terrible as finding that they were attached to a dead limb. But others really find spirituality in the experience. They find that they feel connected to the world. They find themselves introspective, and looking deep within themselves, they find all of existence. I think a lot of that has to do with your frame of mind before entering into such a state. And I requested before that you would imagine this, but the truth is you cannot imagine it, you can only experience. Because that sensation of being trapped there, of not being able to escape from that state, is a real one. And if you imagine, you cannot convince yourself that you cannot escape. You are always aware that you are only a thought away from being yourself again. The lesson, of course, is that no matter how invested we are in our thoughts or our beliefs or various statistics that define us or even our history, to some extent, large or small, we are simply thinking meat. We are meat, and we cannot escape being meat. I'm not sure if I should be terrified or comforted that that is all that I am. I am both this thing, I cannot escape it, I cannot become less than that, but also I cannot rise above simplicity. And chemicals, various substances can change how I think. It's inescapable. I think to myself constantly that there is a core consciousness, there is some bit which I have sculpted over many decades of experience. at his free will, a choice of how I would respond in certain situations or circumstances, but it may also be an illusion. It is possible that a single experience could warp the structure, and it has done. But these warps have been positive in my case. The experiences that have changed me, I do not feel scarred, I feel sculpted, I feel as though an instrument had chosen the points where I should grow or shrink. I do not feel damaged by life, but others may, and who am I to tell them that life is a damaging experience? It takes something that is pure and simple and crafts it into something broken or otherwise lesser. Yet I think again that the potential is what makes the pure simplicity, the Ouroboros, the circle, these shapes. A roll of tape, it can be shaped into any other shape. But are any of those shapes less because of that lack of potential, because of the definiteness of the shape? Does that reduce the quality? I think no. I think they are all different. But it is as though I was born as a bag of flour and sugar and other raw materials, and I took part in rearranging myself into a cake or perhaps meatloaf. And I wonder if, are these things less than flour? And yet if I had taken that flour and arranged it into rotten flour, or mixed it with concrete and made it into a cube, are these things less for their lack of potential? It seems to me that the meatloaf is excellent, and equally excellent is the cake. And in fact, these things are more excellent than the pure flour, in spite of the flour's potential to be the meatloaf or the cake or a salad. It is because all of these ends are excellent, and the flour's quality is in its capacity for excellence. It is less than the meatloaf because of its potential for disaster also. So I think life, if you are a broken person, if you are a person who is less than flour, less than the raw material, that perhaps life could be regarded as a damaging experience. But ultimately, in all of us lies the potential for purity, for greatness, for spiritual understanding, and for growth, for transmogrification, for precognition. And because of this, there is some great amount of potential greatness in all of us. And I don't think things that one experiences could really remove that, but this difference between imagination and the actual experience explains the difference between imagining that one is on their knees and actually bending one's knees, perhaps to pray or also to scrub the bathtub or various, you know, to perform other things, to measure one's bed. So the experience, it is why simply reading a book and writing a book are different experiences. Why making a sandwich and eating it and being part of a sandwich and being eaten, they are different experiences. Or are they? Well, if you have ever been part of a sandwich, whether it has been consumed or otherwise, or if you have made a sandwich and then consumed it or discarded it, please call and share this experience. The number is 617-253-8810. Very curious to know if the experiences are similar. I would love to get one of each, or perhaps a person who has experienced both. For a brief moment in everyone's childhood, there is a belief that potential is unlimited. Or is there? I do recall this belief very strongly influencing me as a child and enabling me to achieve many things which I believe I would have been unable to achieve under the false hypothesis that I did not have this belief. Later, I managed to revise this belief to something like, I can do anything that I am able to do, and this at the moment seems vacuous, but then it did not seem so. Then I realized that I could achieve any one thing if I devoted myself completely to achieving that achievement. And this is an important thing because it defined for me the concept of having a priority. But then I discarded this belief in favor of a simpler belief, but one which I think is more rewarding, which is that if I would like to be happy, that is something that I can take and that it cannot be taken from me, because in spite of being a sack of meat, happiness is somehow lodged deeply within the meat in a place where a person cannot reach, that if they wish for me to not be able to grow or to otherwise take some positive from every experience, that they would have to destroy me utterly. Even in death, a ghost of myself or my spirit would continue to benefit and to appreciate the experience. Or maybe not. And if you are listening with us for the first time, usually we have at least two or three co-hosts, because the purpose of the program is not for me to disseminate or pontificate, but simply to enjoy the experience of being in this journey simultaneously, and for damaging, as we, you know, in our earlier discussion, damaging one another, but alternately to take each other and to affect each other, to cause each other to grow in whether a positive or negative way, but in any case to cause one another to reach a potential eventuality that existed at the beginning of the interaction. And I feel myself reaching out and damaging in this way all the people that are listening. And if you would like to also join me in damaging, so to damage and to be damaged, or to cause a potential eventuality to occur, a particular one, to influence which one occurs, feel free to join. The number is 617-253-8810. Let's bring our first caller on the air. Marhaban, caller, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome, caller.
Hi, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being with me.
So, I've listened to the show many times. This is the first time I've decided to call. I wanted to keep you company. It seems very, you know, not with some other people today.
Well, thank you for listening and also for calling. Indeed, my other hosts, unfortunately, are traveling or meditating, and I could not go. I had to remain because it seemed that one of the most spiritual experiences I have every week is to be here.
Absolutely, I agree, and I actually try to make it to be here with you on your show, or at least where I am with your show in my presence. As much as I can, but I'm actually I'm a musician. I end up out of town most weekends and usually leave Friday night. So this is a fortunate night for me that I can be here.
Well, thank you for doing so, caller.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about sandwiches.
So are you a maker or a makee of sandwiches?
A little bit of both. I like to think that I've, you know, come a long way in perfectioning my sandwich abilities, the making abilities.
And what particularly do you how do you qualify the sandwich? Before I was speaking a little about potential existences, and I think a sandwich is a great example, because in the beginning there is no sandwich, there are only the elements. And yet, ultimately, it has happened to me that creating a sandwich, I regret the creation. I wish that I had the original elements. and I feel strongly that I have damaged them because the potential is reduced.
I think that's very valid. That definitely makes a lot of sense, but, on the other page, it's like you've then created this sandwich which now has infinitely more potential.
Because the sandwich then can also rejoin the ecosystem and become part of other creatures and eventually other sandwiches?
Absolutely.
I see.
A sandwich is one of the most important sandwiches that I've experienced.
I see. Yeah, indeed. I think that, however, certain substances can be added to the natural sandwich, which can at least take it out of the current paradigm of life. So for example, if a plastic cheese were added to an otherwise a natural food, a compostable, biodegradable sandwich, that this sandwich therefore it's now removed from the current paradigm of life. No bacterium can consume this plastic.
Are there any that we may not know of that could consume this plastic?
I believe so, and that's why I qualify by saying that it's this current paradigm of life, because it is conceivable that a future paradigm of life will incorporate plastic in some unknown way.
Is it then viable to value a sandwich as a mortal sandwich or an immortal sandwich?
I believe there is something to that. There is the possibility of an immortal sandwich.
I'm wondering, perhaps the Egyptians might have mummified some version of their sandwich, try and make an immortal sandwich, or put in jars with mummies, you know, to take on their afterlife journey.
Now,
peanut butter and jelly.
There was.
They like bananas.
The Egyptians did place sandwiches in with the or other foods. I'm not sure actually about sandwiches. I should be careful. With the mummies as a snack for the journey. But my feeling on that was that ultimately, you know, we are living in an age where, if you think about it, in all of history, it was rare that a person could make something durable, something that would not change for any appreciable duration of time. And the Egyptians were successful. They were exceptional in being able to create large arrangements of stone that were durable, that continue to exist.
That resist entropy a little harder than others.
Precisely. However, for us, we have managed now, and I say us, I mean the human community in the current age, have created substances that will outlast the pyramids simply because no organism is interested in them.
True.
It's a terrifying statement about our dominance and yet still our subservience, our being somehow second in nature to time, that time will always master us.
And, absolutely.
Have you ever had an experience where you have lost time?
Definitely. I actually had one a couple weeks ago.
Could you tell me about this experience?
Well, I was actually on an island at the time. And from what I can remember, the clock strikes midnight. And the next thing I know, I'm waking up in my bed. And there's about, 7 hours, whatever you want to quantify, hours, had just gone by. There was no, I feel that I wasn't present for those times. So maybe actually time lost me.
That you missed each other, I see. That's a beautiful expression. I was lost to time. Time lost me.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the experience of being delirious?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
And so in my experience, being delirious and having a very, very high fever was this experience that I described earlier, that I felt repeatedly injected into time. And I think that there must have been some short-term, there was an acute damage to my short-term memory because I could not remember precisely what order the events of the evening had occurred in.
Yeah.
And I could not have said at any point what had brought me to the point that I was.
Right. How did I get here? Where did I come from?
Precisely.
But wasn't that place where I was going to be next? But that's where I came from?
Precisely, precisely. Every moment seemed like an age to me. And coming out of that, I found it difficult to relate myself to the person I was before that experience. It seemed really a lifetime had transpired.
Wow.
What was your experience as a delirious person?
When I was delirious, I was actually very young. And maybe like you said, it came from a very high fever. And, you know, I don't know how long it lasted. So again, time's measurement was absent from the situation. But I hallucinated a lot.
You did.
This was from fever. You know, it wasn't drug induced or anything like that. And this hallucination was racing. It was racing faces across my wall, the wall of my bedroom, and the faces would sort of set themselves up on some sort of starting line, and then they would begin to move incredibly fast. They'd actually leave the room, and from what I understood, and this was, you know, I didn't get up and watch them leave or like watch them go through the rest of the house, but I knew where they were going, and I knew, you know, sort of the touch point at which they turned around and come back to my room.
They were racing to another point, and then they would return. And what was the consequence for losing?
Nothing really. It really did seem like they were doing it for fun.
The faces.
It looked like they were having a great time. They were smiling, that's for sure.
Did you find it grotesque or terrifying?
Just rather confusing. At the beginning was a little terrifying, you know, coming to a situation that has never been experienced before, especially a young person.
Mm-hmm.
But after a moment, it was kind of fun for me too.
I was, when I had this experience, I remember having this sensation. Of course, I had a very high fever, and my parents were both obviously very worried, so they would take me and run cool water over my face and my hands, and I remember as they poured it observing that the experience was simultaneously very slow. It seemed like an eternity that I could discern individual droplets, and yet the water itself seemed sharp, almost like it was being shot at me. And so I had this dual experience that both time was very, very slow and very fast. And my response was to be very, very anxious from the experience.
Was there ever any thought about the cool water droplets? You know, you felt they were being shot at you. Was there ever a moment that you felt or looked back and reflected that maybe they were being chilled at you?
that they were being chilled at me.
So like, you said it was cool to the water, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the drops were being chilled at you.
They were being chilled at me. And I think it's really the opposite. I think that when they touched my skin, they became much warmer. And you could almost imagine the molecules becoming very fast when they hit my skin. But still, clearly it's a psychological response, not a physical one.
Definitely.
Yeah, I've never really had an experience like it since I have been delirious. It has happened many times. I remember, of course, the water being so difficult to obtain that I had never had that much of the water poured over my face for anything other than a bath, and even then not quite so much.
Right.
But very, very terrifying experience. Yet I've heard people experiencing similar things from illicit substances, from other things.
Definitely, I would say that's kind of what I hear most about, those kind of things.
Is
a little bit of delirium kicks in.
Similar experiences. And I wonder, I mean, on one hand, it was terrifying, it was a frightening experience, but if I had been properly prepared, as it sounds like you were, if I had been more relaxed, I might have found it a spiritual one. It may have been something that could have helped me learn about myself. It's difficult to put a quality statement on such an experience. You know, as I said before, I could look at myself after these experiences as a damaged person, but at the same time, I have simply reached a potential eventuality of my earlier self. Could I really regard it that way?
I think that definitely has to do with, you know, our natural entropy of our existence, as, you know, our bodies, our sack of meat is subject to certain entropy. Our soul, our mind, is subject to entropy. It's interesting that our mind grows as we grow older from the young stage, and it's constantly growing, but the physical part of our brain is subject to entropy.
Hmm. The brain itself, of course, after a certain young age, begins to wither. But I like to think of the brain, of aging, as simply being guided or guiding oneself towards one of many eventualities. It's inevitable. The interesting thing to in my mind is a person who does their best to avoid growing, to avoid aging. I've always found that to be amusing, because it's so futile.
Right. It's inevitable. There's definitely no changing that.
But look how we grasp at... I remember when I first began to gray that I would dye my hair. I'm not sure why. What part of youth was I trying to covet, to hold on to? I'm not sure. I think maybe it was only for in order to attract a mate.
Right, which is primal instinct.
Precisely.
I think definitely part of growing old is like you grow up and you extend out of childhood. And then I think between the 20s and 30s, you're really just putting together your sandwich.
You are assembling the sandwich.
Now, the sandwich of your life.
And so you feel like you are part of a sandwich now.
I do, actually. And the next thing I was going to say is that as a person, you know, we provide ingredients for other people's sandwiches. in a really big way. You know, my sandwich is made up of the influence and the ingredients of my friends, my peers.
Precisely. All the people that you have interacted with, you have reached out and eaten their sandwich. And they have, in turn, in one way or another, they have yielded of themselves a sandwich. And variously delightful or objectionable.
It's like, can you think of a person in your life that is one of the biggest ingredients of your sandwich?
I think inevitably one's parents influence one's sandwich, even late into life. I think I recall a period in my life where I tried really to tell myself that my parents were a historical or a biological accident in their relation to me, but inevitably there is a great amount of my being that is devoted to them. I'm not sure. Did you have someone else in mind?
No, I just, you know, like I said, I'm a musician. I'm in a couple of bands. Mm. Definitely my bandmates definitely make up the biggest parts of my sandwich. In fact, I feel there's multiple sandwiches, different styles. I've probably got, you know, a nice hero with one band and maybe a euro with another. Pita, grilled flatbread, yeah, all these different options.
And it is an oversimplification to suggest that we are growing into a single sandwich. Because we aren't. There are so many aspects. But just as the sandwich itself is so complex, a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. There's all the different elements, you know. There's, you got to say, your meat, your solid, that's the main body. Then the rest is kind of ornaments, and one might be a sauce, one might be a cheese that melts over and in effect becomes a sauce. In the way that a friend can meet you, their cheese for a while, but they eventually melt over you, and now it's a new sauce. Maybe it becomes part of the sauce that's already on the sandwich.
Absolutely, and there is no reason that one should be categorized. Why should there necessarily be a bread? I was told recently of a sandwich at some fast food establishment that was, instead of bread, it had two chicken breasts.
I was actually going to ask you about that, if you were familiar with that particular sandwich.
I have not. I'm not really, I don't recall exactly the composition.
I believe it was chicken as buns, and then pretty much bacon and cheese for the ingredients.
It's such an abundance of food that it's difficult for me to imagine that there were periods in my youth when it would be regarded as somewhat obscene for a single person to eat an entire chicken breast, but then for a single person now to consume two of them, it's simply astounding.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's not a sandwich, that particular sandwich.
It definitely stretches the definition, but if it were bean instead of chicken, then I think it would not be too terrible or too expensive or unhealthy.
I suppose like a chicken cordon bleu.
So
that's kind of a sandwich. That's kind of the same thing. That's filled with meat and cheese, but it's really just breaded chicken.
Breaded chicken. Let's bring another voice in with us, caller. Caller 2, marhaban.
Well, I'd like to take issue with people's general acceptance of calling this so-called food product a sandwich. A sandwich is, by definition, something between two pieces of bread.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But caller, what is bread?
Bread is not chicken.
But on the outside of the chicken, I'm made to understand it is breaded chicken.
But chicken has been breaded before, and we don't call it a chicken sandwich.
Perhaps we should. Perhaps we should be open to that.
Maybe chicken cordon bleu really is the ultimate sandwich, always has been.
I'm not sure. Caller, what would you regard as a sandwich? What would... is there an example of a sandwich that is... that particularly fits the definition?
Any kind of sandwich that's able to eat people.
I'm sorry. I think we just lost the caller due to an engineering error. But I think, did the caller say any kind of sandwich that could eat people? If the caller is still listening, please call back. Any kind of sandwich that can eat people. So
that's kind of a point. Maybe he's really referring to our sandwiches. You know, maybe my sandwich is trying to eat you.
But is there something to the idea that so there is to consume and to be consumed? To be consumed. I mean, when I reach out and I tell someone how it is to live and to share some of my experiences with them, and they change, they become my student. Is that my sandwich, consuming them?
That could be. And that's also, you know, how you learn so much from teaching. That's adding...
So it's consuming,
definitely more
consuming
ingredients to your sandwich.
And being consumed.
Right.
My great apologies to the caller that we lost. Again, if he would like to call, we would simply love to have him back. Or if anyone else would like to call and join us very briefly, the number is 617-253-8810.
Real quick,
I
would also like to bring up smoothies.
Smoothies?
Smoothies I definitely consider, you know, on the same level as sandwiches. They're a little more particular in their creation, but they really represent to me a different part of the spirit, a different part of the mind that's still part of this collective whole. And then, like, when you eat a sandwich and a smoothie at the same time, that's just human existence.
The idea there being that a sandwich, like a buffet, has many disparate elements, and they are simply adjacent to each other. But in a smoothie, the entire gamut is homogenized into a single experience.
Yeah, both the situations really refer to and are based on the container. In a sandwich case, it's a bread. And a smoothie case might be, you know, a blender or a cup.
Precisely. The point being that the delivery method is both the motivation and the best part of the item itself. I recall at one point it was in vogue to deliver soup in an edible container, and I think the philosophy is similar.
Absolutely. The possibility for a smoothie sandwich is out there.
I think it can be real. Well, caller, thank you so much for being with me for so long.
Thank you for having me.
Ma'a salama. This is a Dr. Jalis Al-Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. We are not for sale, we are not for rent, we are simply a sandwich. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'a salama. Thank you.
Four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.